Hello, everyone, and welcome to Myth in the Mojave, 30 minutes of storytelling and conversation about mythology and why it's important to our lives today. I'm your personal mythologist, Catherine Savela. Wherever you may be in this wide, beautiful, crazy world of ours, you are part of this story circle. Welcome to 2019, my friends. I feel like I've got to say, first of all, that if you hear strange noises in the background, some sort of huffing and puffing and the sound of chewing, perhaps, that is not me. That's my dog, Steinbeck. It is Kong time here, and I just can't break his routine. So he's going to be enjoying his toy in the background here while I speak with you. And it's kind of funny, I'm realizing this juxtaposition of his familiar routine and the topic that I want to talk about today, leaving home and letting go. Now, mythology is one of these words that is hard to define. Lots of people have taken many different attempts at it. I mean, most commonly, we think of it as a narrative. And yet, if you step back further, closer to the origin of these myths, what you discover is images. Images that are the language of psyche and are the catalyst for the stories that we tell. Now, I recently came across this quote from Alan Watts, who said that a myth is an image in terms which we try to make sense of the world. An image in terms which we try to make sense of the world. And in our current chaos, I think it's worth picking up some images and trying to use them to make sense of the world. The image that has been with me is the image of leaving home. This is essential to so many of our stories. And we think about it in a variety of ways. It's a metaphor for stepping away from the familiar. In stories, it might be a matter of going into the woods, of wandering to the sun and the moon and the stars, like the sister in the Seven Ravens story that I just told you. That is stepping out of the ordinary flow of time and space. It may be crossing 7 times 7 seas, like Ivan in The Maiden King. Another one of those stepping out of ordinary time and space metaphors. The image of leaving home is a metaphor for letting go, making room for the new, facing the unknown. And I think this is what we are all called to do right now. Each of us in our individual lives feeling this to varying degrees, but my conversations with people are revealing a shared experience that this is a time to let go, to release what no longer serves, to prepare for something new to come in, and to meet the challenge of holding an empty space for that something new to come into. Leaving home, that image, is frequently associated with stories of the quest, of the hero's journey or the heroine's journey. And that's a very good pattern. I give thanks to Joseph Campbell for pulling that out of all of the myths across cultures and time that he studied. But it also plays into fantasies of Western contemporary culture about will and control. And the funny thing is that those fantasies of will and control are among the very things that are challenged, relinquished, and reshaped in the course of a hero's journey. In other words, it's necessary to see that fantasy in order to make the journey. But this leaving home, it's not always a movement towards something. Sometimes it's about leaving, even running away from something. Or it may be a matter of being pushed out of home. So leaving home can take a number of forms. For example, you might be answering a call. like Percival, the story of Percival, who sees the knights. He's out in the woods. He sees knights. He never even knew that they existed. As soon as he sees them and he talks with them, he is compelled to become one, and he can't wait to go. Runs home, tells his mom, "I've seen knights. Now I know they exist. I've got to be one. Love you, bye." You might be compelled to go, though, also by a sense of responsibility or obligation. Back to that sister in The Seven Ravens, although her parents told her that she was not responsible for the fate of her brothers, who had turned into ravens and flown away, she couldn't shake the sense that she was the answer, that she had to take action in order to redeem them. And so she slipped away one day with just a few things she thought she might need for that journey. Leaving home might mean being pushed out, like Vasilisa. In the story of Vasilisa, her stepmother and her stepdaughters want to do her harm. They want her to be killed, and so they send her off to the Baba Yaga deep in the woods to get fire. They think that this is a made-up errand. We later discover, of course, that it's an essential part of Vasilisa's destiny. But when she's standing out there on the front porch, trembling, wondering what she's going to do, because the last thing she wants is to make a nighttime walk into the woods looking for a cannibalistic witch, it's her doll who says, "Hey, it's cool, do it." And so she goes. You might be taken out into the woods and left, like Hansel and Gretel. In the story of Hansel and Gretel, you have two parents who are down to their last crust of bread, and they don't know how they're going to take care of their children, and their answer to that is to take their kids out into the woods and abandon them. So that can happen to you. And of course, Hansel and Gretel pull together, brother and sister team, and they survive. You might also be out in the woods hunting. And this is a variation on this leaving home, I think, because you're not aware that you are leaving. I mean, you may be out in the woods hunting, that is, actively searching on the borders, on the periphery, away from your hearth, away from the familiar, actively searching for something specific, for your game, so to speak, only to find yourself engaged with something completely unexpected. This is what happens to King Arthur in the story of Sir Gawain and Lady Ragnell. He's out hunting, and then he sees a white stag, and then he meets the chieftain who threatens his life. And that puts a whole chain of events in motion that were well beyond the imagination of King Arthur and the known parameters of Sir Gawain's life, that's for sure. So much is met at the edge of the woods, often in Western tales under an oak tree. And the acorn and the oak, it's a beautiful metaphor for our destiny and the understanding that your character and your destiny are within you from the start. So much is found at the edge of the woods, and so much is found in the heart of the dark woods. A familiar metaphor for being lost and alone, for the dark night of the soul. This reminds me of Dante's famous poem, The Inferno, which begins, "When I journeyed half our life's way, I found myself in a shadowed forest, for I had lost the path that does not stray." To be in the wilderness, that dark forest, is a form of the wilderness. And the wilderness outside the familiar, away from home, is a place of revelation and initiation. It's a place where we often learn the art of surrender and or discover them, that we have a previously unknown guide in life, a guide who can take us beyond our settled routines and habits, beyond the stale, and further into the mystery. So this leaving home can take place under a variety of circumstances and with a variety of intentions. And yet, you end up with something different, with something more than what you expected or thought that you had bargained for. And this leads me to a poem that I like. It's Rumi, translated by Coleman Barks. And Barks titled it, Unfold Your Own Myth. Now, Rumi didn't usually title his poems. And it came to be known as Shams. And you're going to hear that word in this poem. Shams was Rumi's mentor or guru. Let me read you the poem. Who gets up early to discover the moment light begins? Who finds us here circling, bewildered, like atoms? Who comes to a thirsty spring and sees the moon reflected in it? Who, like Jacob, blind with grief and age, smells the shirt of his son and can see again? Who lets a bucket down and brings up a flowing prophet? Or like Moses goes for fire and find what burns inside the sunrise? Jesus slips into a house to escape enemies and opens a door to another world. Solomon cuts open a fish and there's a gold ring. Omar storms in to kill the prophet and leaves with blessings. Chase a deer and end up everywhere. An oyster opens his mouth to swallow one drop. Now there's a pearl. A vagrant wanders empty ruins. Suddenly, he's wealthy. But don't be satisfied with stories of how things have gone with others. Unfold your own myth without complicated explanation, so everyone will understand the passage we have opened for you. Start walking toward Shams. Your legs will get heavy and tired. Then comes a moment of feeling the wings you've grown, lifting. Shams, as I said, was Rumi's mentor or guru, and in his devotion to this teacher, he was in search of himself, which is the point of all the examples that he gives, I think. This whole poem, a series of metaphors for the act of leaving home, going and looking for something, and every time the searcher finds something that surpasses his intended goal or purpose. Moses goes out for firewood. Now, that's probably not an action undertaken with the intention of leaving anything familiar, and yet he finds a burning bush, God. There's a suggestion here that the divine mysteries and the deepest secrets of our existence are all around us if we make a little move. So, although we're all living our individual lives, of course, and we all have a singular purpose in being here, I think there is a call embedded in human life that we share. As we navigate the particular path that we're walking, we are called to listen to the heart, to trust life, to follow where the soul leads. Now, I have this beautiful quote from John O'Donohue about this. John O'Donohue writes, "Your soul knows the geography of your destiny." The geography of your destiny. The soul alone has the map of your future. Therefore, you can trust this indirect, oblique side of yourself. If you do, it will take you where you need to go. But more importantly, it will teach you a kindness of rhythm in your journey. You hear all of these metaphors, right? Geography and the map, need to go, journey, all leave-taking, all movement. I want to add that if you like that Donahue quote, I get some of these things from a man named William Seabrams, who has an email newsletter that he calls Practical Astrology for Artful Types. And he curates some really lovely quotes and examples from various people who, in this case, are all Capricorns, so we're in the time of Capricorn. So if you like good quotes, you might check out William Seabrams and see if he curates things that are interesting to you. So we have stories. Our stories that so often involve this move, this thing we call leaving home, which is a form of letting go. And of course, these stories describe then, in the language of soul, in their images, the experience of this leave-taking and what happens. So let me tease out for you a few of the characteristics of this walk in the woods, of this being lost in the woods. What happens when you leave home? Well, there is often a change of identity. You go from being the young, dumb son, for example, to being the master of your own destiny, and potentially, often, king. You're no longer in the role that you had at home. You find out who you are, what you're made of. And so there's a change in powers, too, or a sense of power. Maybe something that you were told was a problem back at home, or maybe a quality or characteristic that you possessed that was a problem at home. You were too beautiful, or too loud, or too strong, or too fast, or too quiet. Reveals itself to be a very necessary and potent power. There may well be then a change in your sense of purpose as you move closer to your destiny. These stories also tell us that this is frickin' hard and often frightening and painful. Not always, but often, at times, there may be a decision that you have to make or a step that you have to take that requires you to move into something that you know is going to be hard. The sister cuts off her finger. The young man takes a loaf of bread and leaves for a journey that he has no known end. Those are invitations to be tested. And these stories tell us that we will be tested. There will be trials. And I think this is important too, because back to our Western contemporary cultural notions, I think we often feel like difficulties mean that we've made a mistake. Oh, you know, this is my heart's desire, and I went after it, and then all these things started happening, and so I decided I must have been wrong. I must have been wrong, because it should be easy, right? The path should open up in front of me. Well, actually, no. Because the tests and the trials, which in these stories are failed as often as they are accomplished or met, serve to sharpen our desire, to focus it. When you have to use everything you've got in pursuit of something, you get very clear about what it is you want. And then another thing these stories tell us is that there will be a lot of solitude. You will be alone, maybe even lonely. No matter how many fellow travelers you meet, how many intersecting stories you may discover, the experience, the felt experience of leaving home and making this journey will be yours alone. And there's something inexplicable about the whole thing. The logic of the sacrifices, of the twists and turns in your journey, of the gifts that you receive, will be understood in retrospect, if ever. and the help that appears may well come from others that you did not even know existed, let alone expect to meet. Others in the form of friends, strangers, allies, animals, birds, angels, gods, whatever you want to call them. Also insights, moments of grace, synchronicities that exceed us and our power to control or orchestrate them. There's where we run into that fantasy, right, about will and control. And this is also where we enter the spiritual dimension of our leave-taking and these journeys. In following the call of the soul, trusting that, as Donahue said, we are listening to and allowing the personal animating vitality in our own lives, in our own psyche and personality, to move us in the direction that we need to go. And in that movement, we do meet the transcendent, that is, the spiritual. There is a point at which, as Rumi said, you feel your wings lifting. You become more of what you are and who you are at the same time that you realize how relative all of that actually is when you get down to it. I want to read you a David White poem that really feels to me like it speaks to that time in the woods of the testing and the tempering and of the soul's meeting of the transcendent. It's called Self-Portrait. It doesn't interest me if there is one God or many gods. I want to know if you belong or feel abandoned, if you know despair or can see it in others. I want to know if you were prepared to live in the world with its harsh need to change you, if you can look back with firm eyes, saying, "This is where I stand." I want to know if you know how to melt into that fierce heat of living, falling toward the center of your longing. I want to know if you are willing to live day by day with the consequence of love and the bitter, unwanted passion of your sure defeat. I have been told in that fierce embrace, even the gods speak of God. Even the gods speak of God. Leaving home, leaving the familiar, going into the unknown, engaging then with the world on a larger scale. Our stories give us images of being in the woods for days and days, of timeless walks by rivers, on beaches, through the cosmos. And I do think that this holds a particular meaning for us today, at this point in human history. There was a time when many of these stories were being told in different settings, that the wilderness used to be scarier, bigger, literally. The human presence on Earth was much smaller. The difference between being in the city or being in the town or in your village, sitting by your hearth, and stepping outside into the woods, well, it was very different. It was extreme. Now, there's a different kind of solace, I think, that we find in the 21st century, here in the West at least, in the notion of wilderness. Wilderness as a refuge, as a place of respite from the crush of humanity and the trappings of our so-called civilization. It's one of those ironies, or let's say actually beautiful paradoxes, that the wilderness outside and away from home can provide many of us with a very necessary sense of home. And no matter how comfortable or uncomfortable you may feel being outside, it is a return to our first home and mother, the earth. I have been subscribed to another email newsletter, unfortunately one that's coming to an end, that was put out by a woman in Topanga called Mystic Mama. And in sharing her decision to make her change, to stop doing this newsletter and to create an open space in which a new sense of her mission and her evolving place on the planet might step in, she says, "So step outside. Look up to the sky. Lay on the Mother Earth. Move away from your computers. Go spend time in wild places. Spend as much time in nature as you can, and you will find all the answers and the guidance you are seeking. The Mother will hold you as you make time to listen to what your heart has to say. Like Rumi said, there is a life force within your soul. Seek that life. There is a gem in the mountain of your body. Seek that mine. O traveler, or if you are in search of that, don't look outside. Look inside yourself and seek that." One of the things that's frightening about letting go is the empty space that follows, isn't it? And yet our stories and the words of our wise poets like Rumi remind us that there is something there in that emptiness. There is something there in that emptiness that will emerge, that is worth finding, waiting for. So what does this image of leaving home hold for you right now? Have you been ignoring a call? Has there been a persistent knocking from your soul? Do you need to drop the distractions and listen? And leave home? Do you need to leave a situation behind, one that you know that you've outgrown? How much baggage are you planning on taking? This regular releasing and letting go is a necessary part of our cycles. It's not a mistake to look around, you know, your current home situation and realize that it no longer works. That doesn't mean that you kidded yourself decades ago. It means that life is a process. It means that it's time to give up that expectation of a final destination where everything will be perpetually perfect. There is a metaphor for that, my friends, and it's called death. So in closing, I want to share one last poem with you. Another one that I haven't been able to find a title for. I call it Unlived Life. It's by Donna Markova. "I will not live an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance to live so that which came to me as seed goes to the next as blossom. And that which came to me as blossom goes on as fruit." Let's let go, my friends. Let's leave home. I'll see you out there in the woods. And that's it for me, Catherine Savela, and Myth in the Mojave for this week. Feel free to contact me if you have questions or comments about today's program. And if you find something of value in Myth in the Mojave, please join the community on Bandcamp. For only $5 a month, you have unlimited access to all of the programs archived there, as well as free downloads of everything new that I create. And you play an essential role in making future programs possible. If you know anyone, friends, family, who would enjoy this program, please spread the word about Myth in the Mojave. Let's move forward together, sharing what we know is of value and leaving the rest behind. Thank you so much for listening. Please tune in next time. And until then, happy myth-making, and keep the mystery in your life alive.